Hi everyone, I'm here again, so it's me again. So I'm going to talk about this topic, the only disaster recovery talk in this conference today, this time. So it's about testing for DR failover testing. I hesitated a bit about like making it a shorter title, like calling it just testing DR testing, but I figured it's a bit cryptic. So yeah. So that's it, and that's me. I think most of you have seen me yesterday. So let me start with the problem. Actually, I call it the parent problem, which is not the real problem, but the problem that caused the problem that we're trying to solve here. So this is disaster recovery failover testing. So this mostly applies to, like, again, in my small team context. Like, I mean, we are running our entire backend infrastructure within a single data center. So we're asking the question, what happens if that data center is cut off, is down, right? Do we have a strategy to recover? So disaster recovery failover testing is about trying to test whether your system can be able to, like, be failover from the current production data center to a DR data centers. Of course, the assumption is that we have a DR data center running, DR environment running in another center, data center that we can fail over to. So that's about it. So it's a specific type of, I don't know how to pronounce this word, like DERT. This is from the SRE book, Disaster Recovery Testing, so that Google did. And it's a small subset of it. And it's part of our, what we call the BCDR project within Zendesk, Business Continuity and Disaster Recovery. So our focus here is that we want to test the case whereby the data center is lost. The data center that is hosting our production environment is lost. And what do we do? Can we fail over? We have a DR environment running in another data center, so we want to be able to see whether we can switch over to that, the other data center, and still continue to run the system. And we're only testing about customer-facing features. So that means we are excluding whatever internal tools that developers or other people, internal users might be using, but if those things are not available for, like, after the DR failover, we don't really care that much about it in this particular context. So this is the parent problem. So, I mean, a bit of elaboration on why we care about doing this. Like, we have been running fine with a single data center and it has never been a problem, but why do we want to talk about this? So this comes back to the compliance issues. One of it is one major factor is the compliance that we have. This, again, this SOC 2 compliance. So as part of SOC 2, it requires the companies who conform to SOC 2 to have done twice a year disaster recovery failover testing. So this is part of the static requirements. So you have to do that. And, like, we have some enterprise licenses that we promise the customer that if they purchase this particular security add-on, they have certain level of some certain guarantee about recovery time objective, 8 hours, and the recovery point objectives. So these are some gross jargons, but recovery time objective means that from the time the data center is down until the time that the system is up again from another data center it takes about up to 8 hours. And the second metric about recovery point objective is that from the time that the data center is down, right, how many hours of data you have lost. Right, so basically it means that we have kept almost a real-time replication of the data from the production data. So at any moment when it's cut off, we still have all the data up to that moment. So 0 hours is a pretty strict requirement. So also testing to verify the procedures and for DR failover, identify gaps and so on. So these are reasons why we want to do DR failover testing. And indeed, we did a few attempts to try that. And we have two exercises for DR failover testing in the past, and that resulted in 4 DR failover tests. So the reason why we have these two different numbers is because in the first testing exercise, it took us 3 times to get it right. Right, so, and then of course the second testing exercise, we did it we didn't want to try, but the first time it was a bit scary. We scheduled one and then try it, fail halfway, back off, and then inform customers again, like 1 month later, we're going to do this again, and it failed again. So it's only the third try that we managed to get our first ever DR failover testing done properly. So meaning that we cut off, switch to the DR data center, test for a while, and switch back to the production center, data center again. So it's 3 times to get it right for the first time. So, and even though we've done it 4 times, we encountered various issues in the past, like infrastructure, database not working, networks not working in the DR environment, and configuration in the DR environment, application could not handle failures, couldn't handle the failures in the infrastructure, and it just like back off and could not panic and could not handle it. So, some examples of issues that we encounter in these exercises. So we have customers being double billed because we have scheduled jobs running on both data centers. So easily imagine, right, the scheduled job in the production data center happily billing customers, and then when we fail over, the DR environment is also happily billing customers, we double bill the customers. So that's one example, and like our iOS app somehow requires a special configuration that in production environment that we didn't replicate into the DR environment. And because we didn't test the environment, we didn't know, and we only knew that in customer informers that, oh, you guys were doing this DR failover, right? But my iOS app is not working. So then we discovered, oh, this thing is not working. And there's another weird case whereby we fail over to DR environments, and then by the time we want to switch back to the production environment, we discover that there's a huge lag in terms of the MySQL replication from DR database back to the production database. So it's like 8 hours gap or something, so we couldn't really switch back because the data in the production data, the data in the original production environment doesn't have the latest data in the DR environment yet. So we can't switch back. If we switch back, we will lose some data that we just newly added into the DR environment. So it took us a while to fix the issue. So that comes to us, the real problem that we're trying to solve here, which is that can we increase our confidence in doing our DR failover testing? So it's a bit, you have to twist your mind. So what we're trying to do here is that we're going to do something so that we can have more confidence that the next time we do the DR failover testing, it is going to be a success. Like there won't be as many issues as it used to be, or there will be zero issues, it will be the best. But at least please fewer issues, right? And no major issues and so on. So we are going to, that's why I call testing for DR failover testing, because we want to test the environment so that we have high confidence in the next time we do the failover testing, it will work. So that's a real problem that I'm trying to solve here. So the answer is obvious, right? You just test it, right? Because if you don't know whether it works or not, you test it. So we want to test the DR environment while it is still in standby mode. So surprisingly that gave us a lot of challenges. So of course, the ideal scenario is that we run automated testing while the DR environment is still in standby mode, and then right, we just run exactly the same set of browser tests that we run against our production environment. And we run it every time there is a change, either it's a new deployment to the codes, or either ops makes a configuration change, we just run the test again. So this is the ideal scenario, which, as you see, never happens. So the first issue that we encounter is that most of the tests inevitably involve writing data into the database, which in a typical scenario, you don't want you don't want the application to write to update the database in DR environment, because the only change that you want to bring into the databases, the data stores into the DR environment, are those that are replicated from the production environment. Right? You don't want to have some other extra changes that you somehow where someone writes some additional data in it, because that's going to cause a problem if you have to replicate the data back into production environment. So then we ask, can we just run, let's select the subset of the tests that are read-only and run them, but there are only very few of them, so there's not even an option to go with. So to us, the big question that we want to ask ourselves is that, should we, do we allow direct writes into the data stores in DR, things that are not coming from replication, but really from some from the application itself. So this is a big question that we keep on asking ourselves. And yeah, so that's a big question. Should we allow direct write into the database data stores? Database, MySQL, like Elasticsearch, Redis, and all these different databases, data stores. So again, the big question. So what eventually we figure out is that it is a trade-off between two different risks. So writing allowing the apps to write into the database in DR, it introduced a risk of production failure. So this is depending on your configuration. This could be like production will fail immediately, or it could be like when you fail over the DR and then fail over back. That production environment will fail because of the data inconsistency or replication conflicts and so on. So there's a risk of production failure. But if you don't do that, you sacrifice things like test coverage and try to just do minimum test and declare that all is working, then you risk failure when you do failover. So it's a trade-off between like balancing the two risks. You can declare that, okay, I don't care about DR failover, like it's a rare event, so I just want my production and DR environment stay the way it is now, then yeah, you go for the first risk, like minimizing the first risk, and then don't care about the second risk, then yeah, you're fine. Or you can say, like, I think that it's likely going to be an earthquake in the next month, and then I want to make sure that my data center is okay, I can fail over easily, so then you choose to optimize for the second risk, but then somehow you have to give up certain things in the first part. So there's a trade-off. So a bit of background about the chat architecture. So we have all the JS and HTML as the front end. And then we have this middle layer called mediators, which resides everywhere globally around different regions in AWS. So these are like mediator proxies, servers that connects between the front end and the back end. And the real things that we have been talking about here is that there's this bunch of backend services plus the data stores that we host in the data center, right? So this is the things that want to fail over, right? So in you think about a scenario of a failover, DR failover is that we want to cut off the link from the mediators, which is all over the different regions in AWS, and cut off that connection, and then switch to use the things from the DR data center. So this is as simple as it is. Right? Everything here is sort of like a black box if you just talk about the failover testing. Right? So we have a bunch of apps, and then they connect to different multiple data stores in the data center. But when you... So now, you need to look at what is inside data center, right? So in the simplest version, we have a bunch of services, and almost all of them access the data stores via the data API service. So we just really need to care about the data API service, which access things like Redis, MySQL Server, React, and Elasticsearch, and Memcached. I think we don't have to worry about it. So a bit of more information about the different data stores that we have, like MySQL database. We run like master to slave replication from production to DR. And DR is sort of like a read-only slave. And this is the part that we are least confident about whether it's going to work or not, right? Because by nature, it holds like the majority of the data that we have in this moment. So things might go wrong, and it might cause data corruption and so on. So and then we have React, which is a thing that we don't worry a lot about because we have some sort of commercial license from Bashel that supports multi-data center replication and so on. So it has a commercial license. So we don't really worry about that. And it didn't give us any problems in the past few attempts for DR failover. And then we had Elasticsearch, we thought it's like we can handle it. And worst case, we just reboot it from the source of truth. So it doesn't hold any source of truth data. So worst case, we reboot the data from MySQL and it will still work. There's no data lost. And Redis, ephemeral data, we don't worry about it. Memcached, there might be a cold start issue, but we can take care of that. So as you can see, the main thing, the main component that we might be worrying about is actually just MySQL database. So let's talk about different approaches. So the one piece of good news when we study this problem is that our applications happens to partition all the data by accounts. So that gives us a chance that if we set up if we create test accounts on the production environment and let it replicate, so we end up with a bunch of test accounts in the DI environment. And then if we declare that we are not going to touch these test accounts on the production environment and only use them in the DI environment, then in theory, there's no chance that this test account, the data for these test accounts will be updated or modified on the production environment. So the only change that will happen to this data belonging to the test accounts will only happening in the DI environment. So in theory, there shouldn't be any replication issues because you're going back and forth, you are almost guaranteed that there won't be any replication conflicts when you sync here and there, back and forth. So this is a very important assumption that we're having. And so with that assumption, we have investigated different alternatives about how to do that. So of course, best thing is that we avoid writing to the real DR databases. But can we do that? So if not, can we just allow writing to the less risky databases, like not MySQL, but some other, the rest? And finally, if nothing else works, then we just allow writing to all the databases and figure out a way to get around it. So this is the first configuration that we explored. And we set up a parallel set of test data stores, servers for each one-to-one, and configure the apps to talk to this set of test data stores instead of the real ones. Like we have another test Redis, another test MySQL server database, and so on. So and just right before we do the failover, we switch back to point to the real ones. So the drawback of this is that there is no guarantee that the connection between the apps and the real data servers, whether the connection is going to work or not, you don't know because there's no test that covers that. All you are doing is testing, trying to connect to the test database and test servers. Right, so this was not an option. We ruled that out. So the next thing that we try to propose is that since the connectivity check is sort of important, why don't we just host two different databases on the same physical server? So you can apply tricks like if you have an account DB database, then you just put a prefix like test underscore account DB, but both databases reside on the same MySQL database server, for example, and things like Elasticsearch index or Redis queue and so on. This all could be solved, and you just need to update the library and everything else will work. So that covers the physical connection. And it gives us something along this line. And we eventually rule out this idea because we thought that this is still not good enough, and you don't really want to test on a test database because eventually you're not testing the same thing that you would ideally want to test. So the next thing is that, oh yeah, now it seems you want to test the real things, let's use the real thing, but MySQL is the one that is most risky, so let's exclude that, but you do the rest. So you do the rest. So you run your test with MySQL database as with a test instance of the MySQL database, but for the rest of them, you use the real one. And we even explore things like setting up this MySQL instance in a way that is very, very close to the DR database, which is like we set up a master to slave link here from the real one to the test instance. So that sort of make it a writable slave. So that sort of gives you an instance that's almost the same as the test database, but not the real one. So you can tear this thing down anytime you want, and before DR, you just switch it back. So we talked to the DBA team, and they sort of didn't like the idea. So this is one of the viable approach. Risk-wise, it's also not that huge, but the DBA and ops teams do not like it. They still want to see whether we can test the real thing. So eventually we arrived in this whereby let's just use all of them, all the real ones, and data in the DR DB will have to be eventually replicated back to the production DB because when you failover back, then you will have to replicate data back. So you expect that whatever changes they make to the test accounts in the DR environment will be eventually arriving in the production DB, and we are hoping that there's no replication conflicts and so on. So that's the main risk, like the test data in DI might cause conflicts when replicated back to the production DB. And so this back to the same configuration that we saw in the original graph diagram. So again, back to the question, should we allow them? So yes, we only allow them. And if you look at the trade-off again, like for the first one, do we allow writing to the database? Yes, let's do it. But what about the risk of failed DR failover testing? That's still an unknown, because we haven't really tried to run the test. So the moment we try to run the test, we encounter multiple issues. So one of the tricky issues is that some of the tables use auto increments for column primary keys in the tables. So for those things, like if your test create a new record in the DI environment, and then somehow the production environment keeps on creating new records, right, then you have conflict of IDs belonging to different roles, different contents, and when they try to replicate and converse, there will be a conflict, and then you can't really proceed. So insertion to those tables in DI environment will cause replication conflicts, and that's the big no-no, right? So of course there are solutions to that. So obvious one is that you can play with the auto increment and auto increment offset to make, like, if you have two data centers, you have like one with odd numbers and one with even numbers, so they will never conflict with each other. So you can still merge back. But again, our lovely DBA teams vetoed the idea, because you need to run a change of configuration in the current production database, which they hate to do. So we